Welcome back to Count Me In, IMA's podcast about all things affecting the accounting and finance world. I'm your host, Mitch Rochong, and today's episode is a bonus conversation about IMA's commitment to diversity and inclusion. My co-host Adam talked with Carmen Bailey, Senior Manager of Procurement and Business Diversity for the Columbus Regional Airport Authority. Carmen is also a member of IMA's Diversity and Inclusion Committee and joined our podcast to talk about IMA's D&I toolkit that was released in June of 2020. Carmen was the primary author of the toolkit and answered questions about how management accountants and organizations alike can apply it. So now we'll head over to their conversation and listen to what she has to say.
What is the IMA D&I toolkit?
Well, the D&I toolkit is a tool or resource for organizations to use to start or enhance their D&I journey. The toolkit is really designed to get the organization thinking about what D&I means to them as an organization and a way to get everyone on the same page. It's really about helping to start the conversation. By no means is the toolkit comprehensive in that it will satisfy everything needed or required around D&I, but it is certainly a jumpstart, hence the name, and it can be expanded and built upon to create a comprehensive D&I strategy and plan.
Sure. So why now? What was the purpose of creating this toolkit?
Well, really, to be honest, the timing of the toolkit couldn't have come at a more appropriate time. With all of the social unrest and focus on diversity, the toolkit was released at a time when organizations were really looking to start the conversations around diversity, equity, and inclusion. And the purpose of the toolkit was to do just that, help organizations start those conversations. But really, we had already started the toolkit before, you know, really any of the stuff that was going on in the world really even had, you know, come to a head. So we had already started it.
So, you know, what can management accountants do with this? You know, how can they apply this toolkit to their everyday, you know, business life or even personal life?
Yeah, so management accountants, they can really help their organizations think strategically and help come up with a reporting plan and corresponding analysis to gauge where the organization is and where they would like to go as it relates to DE&I. I'm a firm believer in what gets measured gets managed. So if the organization wants to attain a certain result, then the reporting or data gathering around DE&I is crucial. So this is something that really the management accountants can really help with because, you know, obviously you want to know where you are with DE&I, where you would like to go. And so having someone that really understands the numbers and how to equate all of that information and synthesize it is really important.
For sure. So how does one get buy-in from their company to start taking steps in the right direction? Because I can imagine that if you're not at the top and you get access to this toolkit, you know, how do you take those steps to your manager, to your manager's manager to say, hey, we need to make some changes?
Yeah. I mean, personally, I don't like the notion of buy-in when it comes to DE&I. I know that's a term that everybody uses, you know, you got to get buy-in. But to me, I guess, first of all, D&I has to start at the top. And if the leadership of the organization doesn't understand or seek the information and knowledge to understand why D&I is important, then it's very hard for a lower level employee to get leadership to buy in. You know, there's tons of data available on the business reason and ROI, return on investment for D&I. So to me, top executives, at least good top executives, educate themselves on business imperatives every day, or at least they should, and D&I is no different. So, you know, I understand that an organization may have to hire a DE&I professional to help them with their DE&I strategy and implementing a program, but the concept of DE&I and why it's important should not need buy-in. DE&I can't be the flavor of the month if the organization is not ready to put the work in. And be honest and, you know, do it just to tick a box. So it won't work if that's the reason why they're doing it. And the consequences will be far more detrimental than if they didn't start a program at all, if they're not doing it with the right intent in mind. So that whole concept of buy-in doesn't really work for me. I think executives should really understand and seek out the knowledge to understand why DE&I is important, and they should really be the ones leading the effort and not the other way around.
I mean, that makes complete sense. You know, my next question was going to be, when is the right time for an organization to implement DE&I or to even start using this toolkit? But it sounds like, you know, ASAP.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the right time is whenever the organization is ready, willing, and able to implement DE&I. There will not be a perfect time. There will always be obstacles and challenges along the way. But if the organization is really serious about implementing a fair and equitable DE&I program, then there is no better time than the present. The toolkit is designed to be used at any time by any organization. It even addresses some of the obstacles that an organization may face, and that is completely normal and expected. So organizations have to remember that DE&I is a journey and not a sprint, and it's always the right time to do the right thing.
So now that we know, like, the time is now, you know, whenever a company's ready, you know, it's good for them to implement the toolkit or some sort of DE&I policy. What are some pitfalls that organizations can look out for as they begin their journey?
You know, I think there's probably a few different pitfalls that organizations can look out for. Probably the biggest one, obviously, is the people that will be involved. Obviously, I highly suggest that the organization, if they don't already have one, to hire a DE&I professional, because you're going to need someone that's going to be committed. This isn't a job function that you can just throw on somebody's plate that already has another full-time job and think that it's going to be successful. You really need a person that's dedicated to these efforts. So that's the first thing. The organization has to have resources to put to it. And if they don't have the resources to put to it, then they probably may want to rethink their whole strategy of even doing it. Because if you have to do it, that's going to be probably worse than not doing it at all. So that's one thing. Then also just, it's going to be a change in the culture. Depending on where you are and what the culture is already like, it may be a small shift, or it could be a very large shift. And really, that's something that the organization has to keep in mind, that it's going to be tough for some people to make those changes. And everybody has to be patient and really understand that for some people, this is going to be very painful and uncomfortable for them to face doing things differently, and that really being inclusive is not all the time what they may expect it to be. So they really have to be open-minded, and it's going to take time for people to really get on board with it in some instances. I would say another pitfall probably I would say is just really allowing the organization to understand that there will be two steps forward and then two steps back. It's going to be, you know, most definitely, as I said before, it's a journey and not a sprint. So you can't expect the organization to change overnight, and be okay with that. Just know that it's not going to change as quickly as some of us would like. But then also you have to set expectations and boundaries as well. And if you just really run across people that are not willing to get on board, like they won't even try, then as an organization, you have to be ready to say, okay, this is our stance on this. This is important to us. So if we run across people like that, then we are willing to let those people go. Maybe this is not the organization for you. This isn't the culture that you want to be a part of. And so we're going to have to go our separate ways. Organizations really need to think about those hard choices and decisions that they may have to make. It's not, you know, glamorous, it's not pretty, but they have to be ready to make those decisions if they're really going to be serious about it. So those are some of the pitfalls I can think of off the top of my head that may come to fruition.
Definitely. It also sounds like there are many times where if the tone at the top isn't quite set, it would be difficult for an organization to move forward anyway. It sounds like it has to kind of come from the top in order for things to kind of move forward. Especially that could be the most major pitfall if the top of the organization doesn't want to change.
That's absolutely true. I mean, I've been in my role now for 3 years, going on 4 years. And the amount of change that I've seen since we've gotten a new CEO, because he's completely on board with DE&I, has been so fast, because he really means it and he's committed to it. And you can't have a conversation with him without him talking about it. So really that tone at the top, and because everybody in the organization knows that he's for real, like all I have to say is, well, this is what Joe was saying we need to do. They're on board with it because they know he's on board with it. If he wasn't on board with it, my job would be like, I can't even tell you how much harder. So it really does make a difference, because when your top person, your CEO, is saying, this is what we're going to do, this is the direction of this organization, it makes all of the difference. No different than if, you know, if it's some other initiative that the organization is doing, not just DE&I, but anything. So if the CEO says, this is where we're headed, then everybody rows in that same direction or they get out of the boat. So that's kind of the way that it goes. So yeah, it's very important.
So maybe to kind of wrap up our conversation, can you maybe share some lessons you've learned along your DE&I journey?
Sure. I've learned that DE&I is hard. challenging your own bias and thought processes is hard and uncomfortable, but it is so very necessary to truly embrace DE&I and to make changes within ourselves and within our organization. I have also learned that your biggest DE&I allies and champions may come from an unexpected source and not be the people that you would think. A lot of times, you know, we look to people that are minority or to women or whatever, and we often will overlook maybe a white man, but sometimes those can be your biggest allies. So it's important to, you know, always have your eyes and your ears open to those people that really are open to being an ally and a champion for your DE&I efforts. And that I've also learned that DE&I fatigue is real. And those of us that are DE&I professionals have to take time for ourselves and decompress and embrace that change is hard and doesn't happen overnight. Also, the last thing I think I've learned is DE&I requires a safe space. Everyone has to feel comfortable to speak and not be judged, to say the wrong thing and not be ostracized, and to have the time to examine their heart, look at the man or the woman in the mirror, and hopefully be brave enough to make the changes that are necessary.
This has been Count Me In, IMA's podcast, providing you with the latest perspectives of thought leaders from the accounting and finance profession. If you like what you heard and you'd like to be counted in for more relevant accounting and finance education, visit IMA's website at www.imanet.org.